Next item on the agenda is the discussion request for supplemental commission guidance concerning royalty assessment procedures. Mr. Grab.
Commissioner, members of the commission, this is basically a request for guidance, and I'll explain how we got to that, but just very briefly in summary, as you're all aware, chapters 899 and 1018 of the Acts of 2004 provided that the commission should not collect any rents and royalties until July 1st of 2005, and it forgave the royalties that were held in abeyance. Last August, after the July 1st, 2005 date had passed, the commission chose to refer the matter to the Habitat Management Advisory Commission, partly to look at the schedule and to update it to reflect the consumer price index, because, as you'll recall, the commission recently went through a similar exercise with all the fisheries fees, licenses, and things of this nature, and that review had not occurred with HMAC. The original royalty schedule had been adopted in 79. It had been amended in 1986. Governor Bilyeu's, on February 12, 1988, actually imposed the gubernatorial moratorium, which stemmed from a controversy regarding the royalties that we had been embroiled with as far as the shipyards went. That went unresolved until the 2004 Act. After the commission referred the matter to Habitat Management Advisory Committee, they met on two occasions. Both Commissioner Robbins, Commissioner Schick were in attendance at those meetings. They were appointed by the commissioner to assist. I think Mr. Schick is actually a member of HMAC. Mr. Robbins had an interest and sat in on all the meetings. The result of those was a consensus agreement as to what HMAC thought the commission should do as far as updating the royalties and how those were to be implemented. That was brought to the commission at its November 2005, I think it was November 22nd, 2005, commission meeting. In addition, at the time, HMAC made a number of other policy-level recommendations and a few legislative recommendations, but the one that probably bears most of the guidance that we're seeking in the discussion today is the commission, HMAC, recommended that the commission adopt a bold outline of the royalty. And basically that was the area of state-owned public trust bottom that was being encumbered by a facility. And that more accurately reflected that public trust use than did the commission's old policy of basically assessing a royalty for the shadow encroachment of the actual structures. The commission adopted that schedule, that bold outline protocol, and implemented it effective December 1st, 2005. As you've seen with Mr. Chester and with Tom Langley, with Tanner's Landing, several issues have come up. One was the question of whether or not the royalty should be retroactive to an application that came in prior to December 1st. Both in the Tanner's Landing case and today in the Chester case, you know, your position was that basically it was predicated on the issuance of the permit document. At the time the approval was granted for the encroachment on state-owned bottom, it was not predicated by the application date, which has provided, you know, a certain amount of guidance. The problems that we've basically been encountered in the last 7 months, you've considered several, you know, applications with royalty attachments. Now, you know, in fairness, what the staff has tried to do is to take the royalty schedule, your guidance. We make recommendations on the page two items. You know, once the commission approves those items based on the royalty recommendations, we take that, we use that to recommend as a policy matter what we're going to do on additional applications to try to provide some consistency so that the commission's not assessing, you know, one royalty rate for one individual and another for someone else the following month. What I'd like to do, like I say, you've had several cases in the last 7 months. I just have a few slides that basically will try to highlight, you know, what the commission has done, what staff has recommended, and the kind of little quandary that we're in. And really, then we'll turn it over to you to provide some guidance to us so that we can amend our procedures or adopt a protocol that reflects, you know, how you wish for us to implement the royalty scheme. As I indicated, in the past, prior to the moratorium, and even during the moratorium, we were assessing royalties, we just weren't collecting them. The prior commission policy had been to assess a royalty for the chattel encroachment of the structure itself. Now, keep in mind that when they enacted the legislature in 2004, they also provided a number of exemptions for shipbuilding, and as we saw today in Mr. Lawrence's application, for those engaged in marina sale, boat sales, and supplies. So these are, the royalties are only affecting those commercial structures and private uses which are not otherwise exempt by code. And one other caveat, you know, because there always seems to be confusion, you know, the commission has never assessed historically or during moratorium royalties for private piers, private boathouses, private boat lifts, or any of those things. I mean, it strictly has been for commercial structures. But this was the old policy. The new policy, if this were a brand new pier with four eight-finger slips and a T-head, the new policy under the bold outline would be for staff to recommend approval, and the bold outline would be for the what's colored in blue. So there is, in addition to having an increase in the rate, reflect the consumer price index increase since the rates were first adopted, there was a realization that, you know, in fact, what you're authorizing a private individual to do is to use the area in blue. You know, while the public has a slip, there's no one who would physically pull into a slip, not tie up, and attempt to fish in a slip that was otherwise rented to someone else. I mean, yes, it's an area of public waterways, but I mean, essentially, it was a private use. So this was what we were trying to get at based on the commission's adoption. It's not a problem or the situation that we arose where someone had previously applied for a permit and received a royalty, in this case, you know, for the yellow. It had been there 20 years. As part of the renovation, they were removing the structure and rebuilding the same thing. You know, our policy was to basically say, well, you paid previously for the shadow. You're putting back a new structure. It's still going to require a permit because it's not renovation or maintenance repair. But the commission's policy is to assume the bold outline. So in a case such as this, we would have deducted the royalty that they had paid, you know, or the shadow encroachment for the structure for which the royalty had been paid, and basically assessed the remainder to get at the bold outline. That really, as Mr. Lawrence also this morning said, it's not a problem necessarily. No one likes to pay additional money, but it's not a problem for new structures or structures that are being completely removed and rebuilt because it just tends to be the cost of doing business. And if you're upgrading the value of the property or the structures, they're paying for that use. The problem that we've run into and which has prompted part of this is that you may have permitted or the commission may have permitted a structure in yellow several years ago and assessed a royalty. Due to the size of the slips, the yellows are 10, someone comes in now and says, well, the boats have gotten bigger. I want to add 20 feet of extension to my finger pier, and I want to increase the cost of the T-head. That additional encroachment is going to have a royalty associated with it. The question then becomes, you know, what do you assess? Do you continue to assess now for the entire structure as well as the green areas and subtract the yellow? We'll get to the Norfolk Yacht Club, but when it was done in May, one of the other things was they came in and wanted to install lifts. This was not a private non-commercial. They required a permit. They installed it. So, again, staff's recommendation at the time had been to assess a royalty not for the entire structure, but we picked the various individual slips, and I think they had 7 slips, for which the boat lifts were being installed under permit, and then assessed a royalty for the bold outline of those areas. And I'll show you their drawings. So this presents, you know, a little bit of a problem as to how you get to the bold outline, whether it's incrementally or what do you do. Highlighting just a few of the decisions, Tanner's Landing, again, which you saw on several occasions, was a brand new facility. You know, in this case, we assessed a royalty for the pier itself. The bold outline in the purple area was assessed a royalty, and that was based on the size of the slips. The green area was dredging, and that's never really been, that's based on a cubic yardage basis. The law provides that we don't assess for maintenance. In April, in April, one of your page two items was a Kings Mill Resort. Kings Mill wanted to put on, in addition to their existing facility on the James River, drive-on boat slip areas that were behind an existing pier that provided facilities for 23. What we did was take the 23 slips, calculate that area, much like Benny showed you this morning on the area that was being used for the patrons for the restaurant, and assess the royalty based on that additional encroachment. At that same meeting, you had another application that we brought to you, and this was by a homeowners association, but it was the West Bay Property Owners Association. They initially wanted to apply for 18 boat lifts for their members. Again, what we did is that was not the total number of slips, but we calculated where the boat lifts were going to be, the area that would be encumbered, and then calculated that as the royalty. When we sent them the permit, and what they had done is they said, well, we assume that 18 people may want to go ahead and do it, even though six or seven were the driving force, but if we're getting a permit, might as well do it for all 18. Sent the permit to them based on this calculation. They turned around and said, oh, wait a minute. We really only have, 12, and then I think it dropped down to seven, who actually want to do the boat lifts now and are interested in it for their slips, and therefore, can you amend the permit? We did. It was less encroachment. They ended up with a permit for just the seven, but again, it was based on the slip area and the boat lift because they required a permit for those seven structures. At the May meeting, which was the same meeting as the Norfolk Yacht and Country Club meeting, you had another new facility, and this was the one that was next to the Snapper Rig facility right off of Windmill Point Road up in Lancaster County, Antipoison Creek. They were pulling some of the pilings, which are on the right side of the structure, but it was a 14-slip marina that was designed to serve a development project of the upland. The county had approved it, the commission approved it, and in this area, again, we calculated the royalty based on the encroachment of the bold outline for the slip areas. At the same meeting, and this is the one that evoked a question from Mr. Fox, we had Norfolk Yacht and Country Club that wanted to install seven lifts in seven existing slips at the facility. Again, because those seven slips required a permit, we assessed a royalty based on the square footage of the slip area that was going to be encompassed by that. And that amounted to $5,670. This was in May, and we did get a request in June that I'll get to from Mr. Grady, the club manager. In fact, shortly in the packet that you have before you, you will find the letter from Mr. Grady asking that the commission reevaluate the assessment of the royalty for the slips. Based on the prior commission actions and our understanding of what we thought the commission was trying to do, we went back to Mr. Grady and outlined the royalty history in a three-page letter explaining how we came to it, the bold outline, the changes in the code, and things of this nature. Norfolk Yacht and Country Club eventually paid the royalty, got the permit, and only as of yesterday sent another letter asking it to be brought to the commission. In June, the latter part of June, even though the commission had approved the Norfolk Yacht and Country Club, Warwick Yacht and Country Club wanted to replace 12 finger piers and 10 slips at their existing facility on the Warwick River. It's very similar in nature to the Norfolk Yacht and Country Club. In fact, I'm not sure that there's any difference between the two structures. We applied the same association. They were removing the not the brown pier, that's existing, as were the yellow. They were moving the finger piers, putting in new finger piers, installing the boat lifts in two areas. We assessed a royalty, again, based on the bold outline of the blue area. They had never paid a royalty for the yellow piers, never during the time that it had been, the moratorium had been imposed, and they couldn't provide evidence that when the structure was initially built, a royalty had been paid. So in this case, we assessed the royalty for the rebuilt new piers in the yellow. It went into the total area. They sent two letters, and these were the two particular areas. They sent two letters to the commission. Their manager, Mr. Garner, contacted the commissioner. We had used the same rationale, and basically the staff said, well, find it difficult to treat you differently than Norfolk Yacht and Country Club. However, you know, we can certainly take it, you know, back to the commission, you know, for guidance. We did make one mistake, and this is one I didn't pick up, whereas in Norfolk case, we had assessed the rate at $1.50 a square foot because it went over the public marina into the private marina category. We had used $1 a square foot for Warwick, and that was a staff error. I mean, we didn't charge them the same rate. But it's the same basic applications. So at this point, our guidance, our request to you is really guidance. I like I say, Norfolk Yacht and Country Club officially sent a letter yesterday asking that the commission reconsider this. Warwick Yacht and Country Club, and that is in your packet, has already asked for consideration. In all fairness, you know, if the commission were to apply one rate to Warwick, our recommendation would be that we either refund or apply a different rate, you know, do something to make sure that Norfolk Yacht and Country Club is not being treated differently. If the commission provides guidance that materially affects what we've been doing for 7 months, you know, I presume we can reevaluate all of the projects for which you've, you know, granted approval. But at this point, we're more concerned at a staff level in getting guidance from you as to how you'd like us to approach not the new facilities, but the existing facilities, which is where the problems tend to occur, and how we can then take that and make our recommendations for approval in the consent agenda items, page two items, in coming meetings. Keeping in mind that if a project's not protested, it's under $50,000, and that's probably 75% of the applicant of the permits that we issue, they don't even come to you. So if we take the guidance that you provide during these meetings, we internalize that and use that in the permits that we actually issue administratively. So at this point, I think we really just would benefit from additional discussion and guidance from the commission.
Well, thank you, Bob. I think you've done a good job explaining that. The Norfolk Yacht and Country Club request came across my desk just a few days before Commissioner Pruitt left office. So I took a good look at that, knowing the comments that Mr. Fox had made.
Norfolk
first. Then shortly thereafter, Warwick Yacht and Country Club, Mr. Tommy Garner, came and explained the scenario to me that in a situation where there were existing boat slips, where either the royalty had not been paid, but they were lawfully established due to either occurring or being built before 1962 or for whatever reason, these slips were lawfully created slips that had boats in them. And if not for the fact that the request was being made to place the boat lifts in over whatever you want to call these boat slips, there would be no need for any interaction with the commission. My personal belief was if someone was coming to put a boat lift over a lawfully established slip that had a boat in it, which certainly was encroaching on the bottom land, I have just a little bit of difficulty philosophically with requiring the payment of a royalty for something that in my mind may actually be beneficial to the environment versus detrimental to the environment. I have absolutely no problem whatsoever with the bold footprint approach as far as new development is concerned. I think that is That is exactly the way that we should go. But the installation of boat lifts over lawfully established boat slips to charge $1.50 a square foot simply to put a device in that may encroach less on the bottom line caused me some heartburn. And maybe that's just because I'm new at the job and maybe I don't understand all the parameters, but when that scenario was proffered to me, that's why I asked Mr. Grab to do the wonderful job that he did in bringing this briefing to the commission. So that kind of sets the table. Bob and I discussed it. Bob's been kind enough and professional enough in his briefing, and that's where we are, and I'd like some guidance from the commission. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think your points are well made. I think to Mr. Fox's credit, he did raise that question in discussion, and if I'm not mistaken, we didn't spend as much time as we might have considering that at the time. But I think the unfortunate effect of this policy that we've adopted is that you end up charging people about $1,000 to install for an assessment when they install a boat lift that is, as you say, going to probably have some environmental benefit. So I would think it would be appropriate on existing cases to exempt boat lift installations when they're in a previously existing slip from royalties.
Mr. Schick?
I concur. I've got boat lift issues. First of all, there's three types of boat lifts mainly. We got a kind of what is a boat lift? This not including drive-ons, because drive-ons are really docks. There's the rail and cradle boat lift, which much everybody knows, which I think these two groups are trying to put in. There's also a displacement pontoon type of boat lift, which uses tanks and they submerge into the ground, and that
is a
it's really a different situation, I think. And same thing, and the third thing, which is the most like a dock, it's a hydraulic or cable fixed dock where actually the whole dock goes down into the water and the boat sits on top of it. And that's considered a boat lift, but really it's a dock lift, so to speak. So I think when we're talking about boat lifts, we really have to say the cradle and rail type of boat lift, which, you know, sits on the existing pilings that were already permitted, is an area to exempt from this. I would like to take this discussion one step further, which somebody might shoot me. I don't think there should be a fee to permit these boat lifts in marinas, whether old marina, new marina. I think if somebody wants to put a boat lift in a slip in a condominium marina, that they shouldn't have to pay a permitting fee. Just like in residential docks, you don't even have to make application if you have an old dock. We ask for notification that you're putting a boat lift in. But I think we should encourage boat lift use.
The appropriate
boat lift use, this type of boat lift. And I know they're two separate issues, but I guarantee if you go out into the public and you ask 20 condominium or private yacht clubs if you even need a permit to put a boat lift into a slip, they will say no. I don't think a lot of these groups even know that they're supposed to have permits. And I think it's a situation we also need to look into. But I do concur that I think in an established slip that has already, you know, been paid for as far as
lawfully created,
that we shouldn't charge. Now, if they're taking out a finger pier to put a boat lift in, you know, that's the next step, is because what happens when you want to put a 24,000-pound boat lift in a slip that has 30-foot pilings that are only driven 15 foot in the water? Well, that 24,000-pound boat lift is going to sink right down to the bottom. So they're going to have to pull pilings. They're going to have to remove the catwalk. That's different than what I'm saying is that the poles are there, the catwalk's there, the dock's there. All they're doing is hooking up the boat lift. But if they have to pull poles, add catwalks, I think then you are talking this shadow footprint of the whole use, like our new system implies.
Pretty well have to add poles if you're putting in a boat lift. You're not going to be able to use your regular dock
pilings for a boat ride.
Right. Well, most
they don't go up that high.
Well, some do, some don't. I mean, for example, at Colonial Beach Yacht Center, we built the dock so we can put, you know, the boat lifts on there. And if you have a 15-foot wide span, you have to beef up your rails, but it can be done. So, but I think if you're putting new construction in, then you should have to have the, you know, adhere to it. But if you're just putting a boat lift in, that's all you're doing. I think there's a difference there, and we have to decide where are we going to draw this line. You know, let's say somebody has a 30 slip facility, and they're going to pull all of the pilings and all of the catwalks just to put boat lifts in.
What's the driving force?
Yeah, you know, so, well, you know, really that's a rebuild. That's not just adding a boat lift.
Bob, do you know what the situation is in these two applications, whether...
Reinstalling, you know, new finger piers and boat lifts. So I'm not quite sure I still understand, you know, the distinction that you're making between boat lifts and pre-existing slips and new construction.
Well, there's just no, you don't disturb the bottom. There's no construction as far as dealing with the bottom, which the state owns, when you're talking about putting a boat lift on existing pilings. When you're talking about pulling pilings, then you're disturbing the state bottom, and you're actually affecting the bottom.
I mean, your position would be that if someone had existing pier with large mooring piles, and all they were doing was putting the cable and rail system on it,
right?
That would be exempt. But if they had to drive the piles to support the lift or buttress piles on the pier, that's a new structure, even though the boat previously existed in the slip.
Right.
Okay. Well.
Well. Mr. Roberts.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my thinking is a little bit different on that. I think when we think of slips that are already existing, there's already encroachment occurring, and we're talking about the applicant wanting to install a boat lift in that slip. I think the cases where somebody could simply fit or build a boat lift to fit the existing pilings are probably few and far between. I mean, I would think typically when you're installing a boat lift, you are going to install new pilings to accomplish that, because they've got to be appropriately sized to carry the weight load, et cetera. So I still think you're back to the same situation. You've got a slip that was lawfully established that was resulting in encroachment, and now that boat's being lifted out of the water because you've driven four pilings, presumably to accomplish that. So I would think if we're going to exempt something, that we would exempt that type of activity from the royalty.
Mr. Miles,
I agree. I've been looking at it from the Eastern Shore point of it. Most of the time, when you're going to put in a boat lift, you're going to have to put in bigger and taller piles. You don't pull the dock piles out. You put them in right beside, sister piles right beside. So, I mean, I don't...
I think the issue is, in this situation, is, again, if you're going to go back and retrofit in the footprint, you know, if we're talking about footprint on one side as far as new construction is concerned, never been developed, we should be talking about footprint as well when we're dealing with replacement pilings and replacement boat lifts, because after all, the ultimate objective is going to be to get the boat out of the water in the established footprint that's lawfully established. If you go outside of the parameters of that marina that has been established where the slips have been there before, I think what we have is new construction. That's the way I feel about it. Mr. Fox.
I agree with the concept of, even if you have to put new pilings in, a boat lift in a lawfully established existing mooring should be okay and exempt from the royalty. Let's go a little farther, though, and talk about the, bold outline. I agree with the concept of the bold outline, because that definitely is the area that is encroached upon. However, if you have an existing structure whether royalties were paid or royalties were not paid because they were in the moratorium period. It seems to me that is a, assuming that the structure is legally there, then that bold outline of what's there should be excluded from the calculation of the larger bold outline caused by any changes. So we would take the overall bold outline of the modified structure and subtract any lawfully, the bold outline of any lawfully created earlier structure is what I would suggest.
Okay. If I could.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. I can.
All right. Assuming.
Draw us a picture.
Well, assuming that this structure had been lawfully permitted, whether it paid the royalty or not, or let's assume that it was assessed a royalty during the moratorium, but or whatever.
Whatever. Right.
But they had 10-foot finger piers, and you used to find finger piers on main stems that were pyramidal in shape, were very small, and they allowed you to get in the rear cockpit, but they never ran the full length.
Right.
The finger piers were 10-foot long. They didn't have 10-foot boats. They had 20, 23-foot boats in. Nowadays, they wanted to have 4.5 mooring, and they wanted to have, as the gentleman this morning said, the ability to put spring lines, and so I want to extend my finger piers, to the 30 feet to accommodate today's procedures. I'm still unsure as to, based on your discussion, where you think the bold outline should be, whether it should be everything, in this area, because that was, or whether it's everything minus what they may have paid for the shadow encroachment. I
would suggest that in the example you have here, the original bold outline was the 26 feet by whatever the length is, and the new bold outline is 26 feet plus the addition of the two green wings on the top squared off.
It would be the whole thing minus or subtracted the previous shadow if they paid for that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Mm. So you're saying the old bold line, really the old shadow line.
I'm unsure about the old shadow line versus the old bold outline.
I mean, if they were removing everything, we would, our recent procedure would have been to assess the royalty for the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Where they weren't removing it, they were adding extensions. It has given us a little bit of difficulty because you hate to go back in and then assess a royalty for these areas, the area in interior of the 10. We can certainly do that and basically give credit where they paid a royalty for the prior shadow. I guess I just was hoping that I could get either a consensus or a general agreement, from the commission that this is how I'd like staff to go, and we'll
maybe
try to.
Some others can clarify this.
Mr. Schick.
This is where we're getting into, typically in a marina, if you're going to put a boat list in, you have to have access, and the short finger piers don't work. So they want to go to the finger pier, the length of the whole dock, and then they put, a lift in it. And then steps up so you can go out your finger pier, walk up a step, get into your boat, and then lower the boat. And so you're not trying to crawl through the, the lift.
I wasn't looking at this for any lifts. I was just using this for in-water.
But so if you're adding longer finger piers and you're driving additional pilings to put in a boat lift, I'm not saying yes or no, but I'm saying that this is new construction to the slip facility. Now, if your mooring pilings are already and your bold outline is already out there and you're not changing your bold outline, you're not adding anything to it, and you do have to add some additional pilings for support or maybe pull a piling and drive a new piling in the same place or something like that, that's different than adding finger piers and that type of situation. That's just what I'm saying, is it goes beyond just putting the boat lift in an existing slip. as far as where the line goes of where we want to say you've got to pay for that bold print or not.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the problem I would have with the notion of applying the bold outline to incremental construction is that if in a case like this, let's say they just wanted to expand two slips, two of the finger piers, you could theoretically just be, you could have two finger piers 10 feet long that they requested a 10-foot addition on. And in so doing that, you would, if you applied bold outline, you may end up assessing them $12,000 in royalties or something extraordinary just because they've put on two small finger piers.
Well, but what we have been recently doing in the last 7 months is only doing the slips where the extension would be. We've not gone
to the whole marina.
The whole marina.
Well, I just believe that you have a footprint that's established that you want to go in and improve, especially if you're reducing the number of slips, which is the case in the Warwick Yacht and Country Club. They're reducing from 12 to 10 slips in the established footprint. If it requires them, I mean, they're not going to be foolish enough to put new boat lifts on the pilings that won't accommodate right. them. I just think that the bold footprint rule should apply there, that should apply in the case of Norfolk as well. I mean, that area is encroached upon right now regardless, and lawfully so. And if you're going to go back and do the necessary work to accommodate the new structures, I just the water's being encroached upon anyway, and the addition of the boat lift seemed to me to be more environmentally sensitive. Those are my concerns. If you've got a square that's allowed to be encroached upon, you come in this square that's established, and you want to reduce the number of boat slips from 12 to 10, put boat lifts in, and put new pilings to accommodate them, I'm not so sure that royalties should apply. I think we're back to the bold footprint again, where the royalties would not apply. So what's the difference? That's
even if you're extending the catwalks. I agree. I just want to we got to define that part too, because somebody might want to come in and say, hey, I want to extend the catwalks. I don't want to put boat lifts in. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to use the bold footprint minus the shadow footprint.
Okay.
Is that true?
Well,
that's what we've been doing. Right. But if there's no boat lift involved, it's a different situation. If there is a boat lift involved, then what we're talking about doing is saying that there is no additional royalties due.
Mr. McCluskey.
I want to agree with you, Mr. Chairman. I think we ought to encourage to have the boats out of the water, keep the bottom paint, the contamination of the waterways and the boats are out of the water probably 95% of the time. I think we ought to encourage that. I don't know of any slips that I know of, and I have one boat lift at my home. I had to come in and relocate the existing piling. No more piling, but relocate them in order to accommodate the boat lift. That's the rail type that Mr. Chick's talking about. Now, whether you extend another 10 feet on your catwalk, you're still within that space. She talked about the bowl.
Right. Mr. McCluskey makes a good point. Keep in mind that boat lifts that are installed at private residences don't require anything.
Right.
Boat lifts that are installed at commercial marinas that sell and service boats they're exempt from royalties. You're really looking at the condominium associations, you know, the country clubs, which are not public, they're private, you know, entities. It's an amenity. I would imagine that the commission could say, from a policy standpoint, that we're not going to require permits for boat lifts, given the environmental, you know, positives at any facility. Now that doesn't address royalty, other than it's not requiring a permit, therefore it's technically, you know, not subjecting, you know, anything, because the commission doesn't require, you know, mooring piles, you know, adjacent to a private pier. But this really doesn't affect private structures. It's going to be your condominium associations, marinas that, you know, don't sell and service watercraft and country clubs, because quite frankly, we, you know, they're in a category, you know, by themselves.
Mr. Robbins, you had a comment.
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking at this point it might be helpful if we could agree as a commission that it would be appropriate to exempt boat lifts in lawfully authorized slips. That is, exempt them from royalties and refer the other details to HMAC for consideration and discussion.
Is that a motion?
Yes, sir.
Can I put a friendly amendment to that? Boat lifts and associated structural amenities.
Is that to include a finger pier?
Yeah.
Okay.
Including mooring poles or support poles and finger piers.
And we're talking about the cradle type of boat lift only.
The one that removes the boat in totality out of the water and nothing.
Just the filing.
Right. Second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Holland. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes yes. Now, we've got two issues. We have a request from Norfolk Yacht and Country Club and Warwick Yacht and Country Club that have previously, within the last 2 months, paid for royalties that would now be exempt under this procedure.
Are they the only ones that we've got?
Yeah, no, I mean, West Bay Property Owners was also boat lifts. I mean, there are, if the commission wishes to exempt boat lifts, we can, there's not that many that
we refund the money.
We can refund the money.
I make a motion we refund the money to those who would be.
Second by Mr. Holland. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. Mr. Graham.
We can give
point of clarification, Mr. Robbins was talking about referring it to HMAC. So no problem. My question would be, I have permits that are ready to go out, and basically we didn't issue them because we're waiting on guidance. If we refer it to HMAC with no understanding whether they could get something back, what do we do in the interim? Do we continue as we
I think what you should don't mean it in the wrong way. Do you understand what the commission did today as far as the exemptions are concerned for boat lifts? That's clear.
Yes.
I would think that we would apply that to those that are pending. If we have to have some discussion with HMAC later on down the road, it'll be discussion in nature just to take a look at it. But I do not, from an agency head perspective, want to delay these people from getting their established permits to rehash what we've decided today.
Right.
That makes sense as a commission?
Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Next item on the agenda, Mr. Grab.
In keeping with regulatory streamlining.
And how I love that.
The next one is basically just to ask the commission to repeal the former private peer guidance criteria that you adopted in 2003. And the main reason is, in 2003, the law was 250 square foot. We were dealing with 250 to 500 square foot. The law now exempts 450. We also said we weren't going to consider finger piers. It was unaddressed in the code itself. A 4 foot. The code now explicitly has said finger piers can be 5 foot. There's really no need for the peer guidance criteria, and I believe it will do nothing but cause confusion if the public goes to the website, pulls that up, because the law has changed as of